When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. I have no idea what I just watched.
Okay. Here's the thing. How are we going to, how are we going to figure out something to talk about today? You know, I came in this morning and I'm like, is it even worth recording an episode? What is there to discuss?
There's just nothing going on.
But, you know, I'm sure we can think of something.
Reminder, everyone, this is our initial reactions episode. And I'm just going to need some grace because.
Shout out Grace.
As Michael Scott says, I know exactly what to do, but in a much more real sense, I have no idea what to do. And that's me today, which is like, okay, there is literally infinite amount of stuff we could get into with She-Hulk. I can't believe what I just witnessed. I even tweeted that. And then obviously before the finale, we had some other plans for today as well. And I can't do the no time thing because I do have some time, but I think just buckle up, right? Because we have a lot to talk about here.
Buckle up. I was there's so much to talk about. Some of this we'll bring up today. Some we'll save for later when we have a break. But I texted you and Pete last night because it just kind of dawned on me. It's been a really busy work week, which is becoming my podcast tagline. But I kind of had a moment last night where I was thinking, oh, yeah, like the finale's dropping in a couple hours. And I realized how excited I was for it. And right. I know that like that sounds like a given because, hey, you host a Marvel podcast. You're probably excited for every finale of the Marvel shows. But sometimes...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it has no bearing on the quality of any one show. It's just, you know, you get such in this rhythm that it's like, yeah, it's finale. And this one felt kind of special leading up to it. Like for some reason, I was just like... extra intrigued, excited. And then it's like I woke up this morning and didn't get to immediately watch it because I had to jump straight into some other stuff. But it's like I could feel without even seeing any spoilers or anything like that, just from the amount of Slack notifications that I saw coming through and the Twitter stuff that I saw, like that we were just things that we were being tagged in and responses, I could feel like a certain sort of energy around it. And that's like my favorite feeling,
no doubt,
to have coming onto this podcast.
Let's freaking go. Okay, so why don't we start briefly with our quick MCU announcements, okay?
Yep.
First off, we're 1 month out from Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. There was a new spot that was released you can watch, and that's about all. it's pretty wild because, as we say often, I think we'll be seeing screeners in the next few weeks or so. So as always, it sneaks up on us again. But that'll be fun. Yep.
Yes. And then secondly, we did have some big news drop regarding the release dates for a variety of projects. The headlines being that Blade and Secret Wars have both been delayed. Secret Wars is delayed by what, about a year? And do we have a new release date for Blade, or is that kind of TBD as they're figuring out a new director?
Yeah, so the official release is that Walt Disney announced on Tuesday it will be pushing back the release of numerous projects, including Blade, Fantastic Four, and Secret Wars. Blade is now slated to premiere on September 6th, 2024, instead of November 3, 2023. So almost a year there.
Okay.
Deadpool has moved back just a couple of months. Fantastic Four has moved back a couple of months. Blade and Secret Wars are the biggest ones because Secret Wars was pushed back to May 1 of 2026 instead of November. So just 6 months there. So okay. 9 months on Blade, 6 months on Secret Wars, and then just a couple on a few of the others. Now, part of this is because Marvel is working on finding a new team for Blade. I'm sure you heard that.
Yes.
And then that probably messed some of the things up. But then also, my first reaction is I don't think this is probably a bad thing. We've talked a lot on this podcast about how some of these things need a little more space. And if they need a little more time for marketing, for CGI, for budgets, for anything, I'm okay with that at this point. We have enough content to keep us fulfilled. It's not like the drought we were in 3 years ago, you know? So.
Yeah. And, you know, I think to the conversation that you and I had a couple months ago, I think now that we're getting, you know, a lot further out from COVID, I'm sure that there are some projects that are still impacted by either current filming situations or those in 20 and 21. But now that we're kind of further from that, it feels like some of our concerns about just the pace have maybe been addressed even before this announcement. But this just shows, like, and you know, looking at the rest of this year, like compared to last year, where we had Eternals in theaters in November, we had just come off of What If, I believe. Then Hawkeye started. Then we had Spider-Man No Way Home, like all in like a month and a half span.
Mm-hmm.
Like this year, you know, we're finishing up She-Hulk. We have Wakanda Forever and then the Guardian special, which is a 50-minute special, kind of akin to the Werewolf by Night one that we talked about last week. And that feels just a lot more sustainable to me. Maybe it's not a huge change, but it feels like we're moving in the right direction. And I welcome that.
Now on to a few bits of Friends from Work news. Tell listeners a quick elevator review of what happened at New York Comic Con. Because I think we're going to get into this more fully in the future. Like we're going to have some weeks off here coming up and we can get, you know, really into the nitty gritty of it. But what were some of your takeaways from visiting Comic Con?
Yeah, man, I am excited to talk about this more. Candace and I are going to talk about this more fully from a comics perspective on FFW Plus. And we're going to kind of join that with our final discussion of the She-Hulk comics that we've been reading there. So if you are interested in getting like the real deep dive, that's where that will happen. But yeah, this was, surprisingly, this was my first time ever going to a con like this. For as long as I've been a nerd and comics reader, it's just never anything that's made sense for me. Like there wasn't a big one close enough to me that I could make work until, you know, we had the excuse of the the podcast. And it was a blast. Candace and I were kind of in the same boat. We were just like along for the ride, excited to talk to some of the creators that we had reached out to. And the costumes, unsurprisingly, were insane. The conversations with those folks that we got to have were really fun and really encouraging in multiple ways. One of the big highlights for me was I got to speak with Charles Soule, and we'll talk about that more in the episode I mentioned on Friends from Work Plus. But for folks that may not remember, Charles not only wrote one of the She-Hulk comics that this series really pulled from, he was also a consultant on the show, primarily consulting on the kind of legal side of all of it, because as I've said before, he himself is a Columbia law grad, practiced for years in New York doing the kind of top tier big law thing, and then set up his own practice and eventually transitioned into writing a lot of really great comics for Marvel and otherwise. So he wrote Daredevil and of course the She-Hulk run. But a lot That's of the comments so cool. that it was super fun because, you know, all along the way we've talked about little bits here and there where I was like, man, that's such a lawyer specific thing, like that separates this from a show written by people that they're writing about lawyers, but they don't actually really know what the practice looks like. And this show has been so good about not doing that. And I brought that up and he was like, Candace actually, because I had read he was a consultant on the show, but I didn't know to what extent. And Candace made the comment like, yeah, it's so crazy. Like we watch it and we're like, somebody in the writer's room knows all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, that somebody is me. And it was fun listening to that. He and I also just kind of talked about the position of having one foot in the legal profession and one foot in the world of Marvel superheroes. And that was really fun. And he offered some kind of encouraging advice on that front. So that was like one of the big highlights. But also on the She-Hulk front, and which is especially relevant today, we got to speak with Zeb Wells and Cody Ziegler, who not only wrote episodes 7 and 8 of She-Hulk, respectively, but also appeared in the episode we're discussing today as writers in that writer's room.
Oh, let's go.
So that was, as soon as they opened it, I was like, oh man, is Zeb going to be in here? And Candace was like, yeah, there he is. And he's the guy standing in the corner. Cody's the guy sitting at the table they keep cutting to get his reaction of Jennifer's take on the finale. And then, of course, you know, Jessica Gao is in there as well, although we weren't able to meet her at the convention since it was largely folks that were kind of also in the comics world. But it was a ton of fun to talk to Zeb and Cody about that because I didn't, you know, I just forget. As we're talking about getting further from COVID, they were saying like the initial writing and planning for this was like 2.5 years ago or something.
Hmm.
And, you know, because I was talking to them about how they've both worked on the Amazing Spider-Man comic and I've read those issues. And so I'm kind of aware of the timeline there and when Zeb and Cody teamed up. And I had always assumed, just because those issues, some of them came out a while ago, that they met in that context and then, you know, Zeb pulled Cody into She-Hulk. But it was actually the total opposite. And I think our listeners will appreciate this. Cody was saying that in the writer's room with Zeb as they were talking through, and, you know, the rest of the team, but as they were talking through the Daredevil appearance, Zeb apparently realized how big of a comics fan Cody actually was and was like, if you're this into it and, you know, you're this good of a writer, like we should have you over on the comic side and actually pulled Cody into Marvel Comics and got him on Spider-Man and Spider-Punk. And so I thought that was really fun. One, just because we loved that Daredevil appearance so much and loved that episode in general. And, you know, apparently Zeb did too, enough to want to kind of bring him onto his team for Amazing Spider-Man. And, you know, one of the things we've talked about in the podcast since we first started getting to interview folks is how fun it is for us to see the creators really loving the stuff that they're working on. And this was just another example of that. You know, like Cody loving these characters so much that the passion kind of overflowed outside of just the TV and film arena.
This must be an incredible elevator ride. I said, give us the elevator pitch. Are we on the Burj Khalifa here?
Hey, this is,
I mean, this is the longest elevator ride in the history. We're taking an elevator to the International Space Station.
This is the She-Hulk tailored very long elevator pitch. There's an issue with the elevator. It's stuck on the floor for a little bit.
It's stuck. I just watched Winter Soldier last night. Captain America maybe got it stuck.
Yeah, you know? There you go.
There we are.
But no, that's the bulk of the She-Hulk stuff. There's a ton of fun stuff on the comic side of things and just other kind of general pop culture stuff that we got to be a part of. Folks that know me know how excited I was to be able to sit down with Jonathan Hickman for a while. That was sort of a dream come true on the comics front. But that is all stuff, like I said, that we'll get into later, probably in bits and pieces on this show, but primarily on the Patreon. So headline, New York Comic Con was a blast, and we're really looking forward to the next one, and we're already kind of working on what that could look like.
Let's go. Two other bits of Friends from Work news. One, we are getting a chance to welcome back a longtime friend of the show, Matthew Berry, next week.
Yes.
So we're going to be chatting about his time on Endgame again.
An OG friend from work.
An OG, one of the originals. And maybe even get into a little fantasy football. Just a little treat there, potentially. So that'll be fun next week. And then lastly, on the Friends from Work side of things, I'm excited about this. Every year around Halloween, we get tagged in photos on Instagram of people wearing Marvel-related outfits, including my wife turning my six-month-old into Scarlet Witch, if you remember.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And so this year we thought it'd be kind of fun to actually partner with Epic Hero Shop and create a costume contest. So basically,
this is
no cost to any of you guys. It's fun. We're just going to have a costume contest where we choose a winner between us and Epic Hero Shop, and you get to win some fun stuff. So here's kind of how it's going to go, Rob. Fans can submit their most recent Epic MCU-inspired and Epic Hero Shop-inspired Halloween costume on Twitter or Instagram. And two people will have a chance to win a year membership to Friends from Work Plus, like you're just talking about. So that's kind of fun. Nice little value there. And an Epic Hero Shop shirt of their choice. So this should be pretty fun. And just for the details of it, if you want to enter, you must be following at the FFW Podcast and at Epic Hero Shop on Instagram. And then post a photo in your favorite superhero Halloween costume using the hashtag Epic Heroween. See what we did there? Epic Heroween. Nice.
That what I love about that has all the makings of a Robbie pun, and I didn't even work on it.
That was Pete, I think.
I think it was.
You're rubbing off on him.
I love that. It would be better the other way around, but I'll take what I can get. Please remember to follow us and Epic Hero Shop. We are at the FFW Podcast there. What we don't want is for you to come up with an incredible costume design and get dressed up and just take this awesome picture with a perfect lighting and then not be entered because you're not following us. That's no fun. That's no fun for anybody. That's just too bad. So don't be like that. Follow us. Enter your submission. We're super excited to see this.
On Twitter as well. Twitter is available as an option, not just Instagram. It's at the FFW Podcast there as well. And you have to get your entries in before midnight of Halloween, before the clock strikes midnight. And we're going to choose two winners. And again, just a reminder, an Epic Hero Shop shirt of your choice and a year-long membership to Friends from Work Plus is all at your disposal. And so stay tuned to the FFW Podcast to see both maybe Robbie and I's costumes. What? Maybe. And we'll go from there. That'll be fun.
I'm going to make Samwise one of the goats from Love and Thunder.
I would love that so much. Can you please do that, actually? I don't know if you slipped that in off air, but I love it. I'm keeping it in there. He just screams all the time. So
he actually
we
does
have to
do
get
that,
into She-Hulk because this is going to be a
We have to stop recording sometimes because he's just screaming.
That's true. Just a beautiful, beautiful creature. Beautiful creature.
Sure does yell a lot, though.
We have to get into She-Hulk. I was as excited to talk to you about an MCU-related thing this time as I maybe have been in the last year or two. So I want to get into that. I do need to follow up on my trivia just because it's becoming a fun thing for me.
Yeah,
I watched two more films in the rewatch journey this week, Iron Man 3 and Winter Soldier. And I have some interesting thoughts that I'm going to save for the off season, but the short version is Winter Soldier is fascinating, dude. It's absolutely fascinating. I watch it and I go, that is very good. Like critically, it's high up. But before I hit play, I was trying to describe this to Annika. I just don't have that much of a desire to hit play on the film. It's absolutely absurd.
Wow.
I can't explain it because I think the Russo brothers are my favorite directors in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know. Annika was like, yeah, but when it comes to like this or Iron Man 2, I'm like, I think I'd rather hit play on Iron Man 2. That's insane.
Oh, wow.
So we're starting to get some divergence in my critic and preference rankings now. And so I'm 11 movies in and it's becoming an interesting thing to track. Okay. So
what?
That's where I'm at. It's really fun to go back to the MCU, guys. Slowly.
Man,
never do it. I recommend
You're making me want to do it. I've never actually done that, you know, so I'm
as long as it's not a rush, there's no harm, no foul, you know, like my daughter goes to sleep. If we got nothing to do, we toss on another one in the order.
Right. No, I love that. For our listeners' sake, when can they expect you to reveal these new rankings, the kind of preference and critical side? Like, is that something where you're going to wait till the end of the entire rewatch? Will you do something at the end of the Infinity Saga? Or is that still kind of coming together?
Still coming together soon. But I feel like I should wait till I get a good ways into it. Because otherwise the numbers are all off, right? Like if I say Thor Dark World is the sixth best movie preference-wise. Well, that's because I've only watched 12. So give me a break here. So I think let's wait a little bit. I'm going to see how it shakes out, and then I'll update people. But trivia is becoming a really fun part of that as well. And so an update to last week, I had asked in what year from Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a masterpiece, by the way. Guardians of the Galaxy 1 ages almost as well as any film in the MCU. Considering how old it is now,
oh, I believe
it's still
that.
Spectacular. There was even a few CGI things in Winter Soldier that looked a little off, but nothing really looks off CGI-wise in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
In what year was Hooked on a Feeling released? And it's a little bit of a trick question. A few of you guys got it. I sent out some shirts this week. The answer is 1973. Did you know that?
I did know that one, but I don't know the trick question element of it.
So Peter Quill yells, Hooked on a Feeling, Blue Swede, 1973. That song belongs to me. But I Googled it and Wikipedia says 1974. And I'm like, wait, what? And
oh,
I realized
wow.
that it was released in Sweden, where the band is from, in 1973, but not into America until 1974.
Wow.
So 1973 is the answer because of Sweden and because that's what he says in the film. Congratulations to everyone who got that right.
Quill's mom had access to as of yet unreleased music. It's pretty cool.
No doubt. And so now, two trivia questions this week. So here we go. Trivia time. Question number one, Iron Man 3. Are you ready, Robbie?
I'm ready. Let's go.
What is Tony Stark's home address?
Oh, that's a good one.
So the Mandarin has just killed somebody and Tony's pissed and all those interviewers are around, you know, and they're like, what can we expect? He goes that whole speech about how he's going to find him and kill him. And it's just good old classic revenge.
Breaks the
and he says,
phone.
On the off chance that you're a man, here's my home address.
Oh, man. I know the street and I know some of the numbers, but not all of them. You're getting really good at these.
Because you're really look for them now.
You stump me most weeks now, and I have to imagine I've seen these movies more than like 99% of living humans.
Well, a lot of our listeners have seen them a lot too, so I can't go with the obvious. I'm trying to go with something that's reasonable but very difficult.
Yeah. No, well done.
This one might be a little bit different. Here we go. Question number two from Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I want you to finish Captain America's famous speech. So he breaks into S.H.I.E.L.D., he takes over the loudspeaker, and he's talking to everybody. And here's what he says, okay? They almost have what they want, absolute control. They shot Nick Fury, and it won't end there. If you launch those helicarriers today, Hydra will be able to kill anyone that stands in their way. So you know the scene, right? That makes sense?
Yep.
So here's what I'm gonna ask you to finish it. This is what he says. Unless we stop them, I know I'm asking a lot, but the price of freedom is high, and it always has been. Can you finish the last two sentences?
Ooh, I think I do know this one, which is on brand for me.
So there you go. Again, mixing it up, just mixing it up. So just a reminder, the first person to email me the answer to either of those questions will receive a Friends From Work shirt in the mail. Okay, I've been waiting for this. Sorry this took a little bit to get into. Holy cow, She-Hulk episode 9 after a quick word from our sponsors and a fun little intro segment here.
Jennifer Walters, Esquire, lawyer, millennial, searching for a way to balance a career and her personal life. Then an accidental dose of gamma-radiated blood alters her body chemistry. And now, when Jennifer Walters grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs. The creature is driven by rage and pursued by online trolls.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
She is provoked into a rampage that has landed her in prison, and now she is seen only for the raging spirit that dwells within her.
Oh man, that gets me hyped. What a fun way to start this. And by the way, just totally forgot about those images that had been released ahead of the show, which was masterfully done on their part. We got so distracted by Daredevil, we forgot about the 80s vibes, but, or 70s? 80s? 80s.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Before our time.
Anyway, She-Hulk episode 9 is titled, Whose Show Is This? As we've said before, this features the return of Kat Corot and Jessica Gao as director and writer. And I have got to say, the thing that I've been most excited about since I saw this episode is to make Kyle recap it for us.
No. You do it.
Nope. I need this. I've been looking forward to it. I need to hear you try to put what we just saw into some sort of linear form.
Oh gosh. Okay. I'm going to wing this. So Jen has been thrown into jail or at least a temporary holding because of her freakout incident. And then Mallory works out a plea deal where she just has to wear the inhibitor and can't be She-Hulk anymore. She gets fired from her job. And while that's kind of all unraveling, oh, and has to sell her house, she moves in with her parents and decides, I'm going to go visit Emil. But meanwhile, Nikki and Pug are working on trying to figure out who this intelligentsia organization is and who's leading and all that. And so they send Pug in as a spy to this male-only meeting. While there, Jen's adventures also take her to that same farm that Emil is on, and that's where the meeting is being held. Abomination is going to give a speech to these men. And then it all comes to a head right there. And right there, one of the weirdest things that the MCU has ever done happens. The fourth wall breaks and she legitimately tells them to stop. She climbs out of your Disney Plus logo. Like, I'm not describing it well enough. Like, if you haven't seen this.
It goes to the Disney Plus main screen.
It goes to the main screen and she comes out of the logo and jumps into the assembled show where they're making She-Hulk. She then confronts the writers of She-Hulk, the actual writers, and says, this is not how the show should end. They say, well, it's up to Kevin. She goes to Marvel Studios, again, on our screen, and finds Kevin. But Kevin is a robot who is making all of these films. I'm going to get to that in a second. And She changes the ending of her own show, goes back to her own show, where she kind of gets a happily ever after thing. Emile is in trouble for becoming Abomination again. The Hulk King is going to jail for breach of privacy, amongst other things. And Jen is seeing Daredevil again.
Right.
And happy. And then craziness as well with Bruce shows back up. Bruce has a son that you warned me about.
Yep.
What the heck?
Yep.
He looks so weird. And then the show is over and more meta commentary in the post-credit scene. And that's my summary. And then what were you going to say? Because I got stuff to do here. I got to say some things. I mean, how did
well, yeah, I mean, we can start in any number of places. The first thing, just while it's on my mind, because I know I'm going to forget if we dive into all the craziness. So just to confirm, in terms of where this episode leaves Jen, or, you know, where the season leaves Jen, she is no longer employed at the firm, right? At GLKNH. She is.
Correct.
So she's.
But then she's She-Hulk again right away. And I thought she wasn't supposed to be. I didn't get that part at the very, very end.
Well, and I mean, and it happens out of the story, right? Like she's climbing out. And whenever we see, first off, whenever they cut to the main screen, I did legitimately think for a second that it had, like, the
screen
app had messed up. Yeah. Because that happens on Disney Plus sometimes. Like, I've been booted out of things like that before. And so that was fun. But then in that, like, in that kind of pause moment before we see her break through She-Hulk, we hear her say, oh, yeah, like, let me transform real quick. So it's interesting that, like, that, you know, one of the things I'm excited to talk about in general here is the relationship between what happened kind of outside of the set narrative and what happened within that narrative and kind of what is quote unquote canon.
Well, yeah. So hold on. Before we get into that, I need to say this. Like, I am literally dumbfounded. I have no idea what to think. No idea. I pride myself on being able to be a decent gauge at what people are going to think.
Uh-huh.
And I can't believe what I just watched. And I don't know if it's like genius or a poor move. I mean, I can't emphasize this enough. I have no idea what to think yet. I think I love it, but I have no idea. And it's such a big swing. I mean, we talk about the show is already a big swing. This is the boldest decision since WandaVision, I think. And I have no idea if people are going to love it or hate it. Again, Michael Scott, like, why don't you explain to me what happened? Like, I'm 8 years old, please. It's actually on the canon side of it that you were getting at, genuinely confusing on what I just witnessed now. It is literally like The Office when we joked about that, where it's like they are actually putting a show together. I guess, can we just start there? I know this is so hodgepodge. Explain the logistics actually of what happened. Like, are we saying that inside the MCU, they are making films about the MCU?
No, I mean, I think that this gets, man, I mean, there's so many places I want to go here. And I think we'll
is it literally meant to be, haha, it's a funny meta fourth wall break. Don't read anything else into it.
I think it's that. But I also think it's important to, this is one of the few times where I think having a comics background is not, if not essential, really additive, because as we talked about when we were first previewing She-Hulk and talking about the fourth wall break, you know, the character historically, especially under John Byrne, would not only kind of climb out of the comics panel, but she sort of had this ongoing vendetta against John Byrne because of the situations that he would put her in. And so on the covers, she would be talking to him. In the comics, she would be like, almost exactly what we saw here. Like, this is a terrible story. Why are you putting me here? Like, can you not do any better?
Okay, so, pause. Is it a little bit like Stranger Than Fiction?
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
do you know the movie?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen it in forever, but I think that's a good comparison.
The writer is writing a book. Whatever she writes is affecting another real world person's life.
Okay, so that's a good question, because the second thing I was going to say, besides this being an homage to that, I think that there's sort of a deeper comics history to this that is worth briefly noting. Way back in Fantastic Four era and Amazing Spider-Man, from like the early 60s, like very beginning of the kind of Stan Lee Marvel age, they would put these things in the issues that were... they were illustrated, you know, by Kirby or Ditko, and they were illustrations of Lee and Kirby and Lee and Ditko creating these comics. Or in one case, in a Fantastic Four issue, a fairly early one, they actually drew themselves, wrote themselves into the Fantastic Four issue, the main story, and they interact with Dr. Doom in that story. Now, that gets really dicey when people are really, really into tight continuity, like we've talked about, because like within the comics, that happened. Now, does that mean that in the Marvel Comics world, Stan Lee is a person that is dictating what happens to the Fantastic Four? No. But it did happen in a canon comic, so then you kind of have to wrestle with the nuances there. And I think that's exactly the situation here. And that's why I think it's both genius and will probably be recognized as a really, really great homage to that kind of classic Marvel spirit on the comic side, but also is risky. And like you said, I think a really bold move, because I could see it, you know, for some people just confusing them, and for others really turning them off, because, you know, like up until at least the Infinity Saga, we always really talked about how this was set up to be the most kind of believable, contained version of an ongoing superhero story that we had seen. And, you know, now this is, after a lot of things this year that have kind of blown that open, this is the thing that really just like...
Yeah. Some people, I guarantee you, and I haven't gotten to read a whole lot of reaction yet. We're recording this pretty early on. Some people, I guarantee, are going to be like, this is so bold and creative and genius that this is the greatest Disney Plus finale they've ever done. Mm-hmm. For sure, there's going to be those people. I guarantee there will also be people that are going to be slightly turned off that they let a few of the plot threads go by the wayside in exchange for being incredibly meta. Like we talked about the meta,
right.
But
right.
To the millionth degree that we never saw coming.
Right.
And I can truly see both sides. And I think that's why I'm trying to figure out, like, when you close the book on She-Hulk, how are you going to remember that entire sequence from the time she jumps out of the Disney Plus thing? Like, how are you going to explain that to somebody? And how are you going to remember it? Because, like, for example, it's not canon in that if it was truly, truly real world, Kevin would actually be Kevin Feige, right?
Right.
Like, so it's
right.
Not a literal...
Yeah. No, which is a good point.
It's not a literal adaptation of totally self-aware meta. I don't even know if that makes sense, but
hang then
with
again,
me.
The writers are the actual writers, like we
but
said.
But the writers are the actual writers, so it's not like she jumped into our universe, like currently where we live.
Right.
Because yeah. Kevin's a real person in ours. But I just don't get... How are you going to... Like, did she jump into another universe for that second? Like, how are you going to view that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think if we want to get into you know, the actual headcanon of it for a second, which is fair, I think that's right. Like, it actually reminds me of the final episode of the 90s Spider-Man cartoon series. I am just like tossing out old school Marvel references left and right today. I don't know where my brain's going, but
I need your help. So
in that final episode, which is really interesting in a lot of ways, because the writer of that series, John Semper Jr., claims that he is the one that actually came up with the Spider-Verse, which was sort of like the first time that the multiverse was introduced into the Marvel world, at least in that dramatic of a way. And so it was really similar to kind of what we saw in like the end of the Spider-Verse movie, where you have all these different Spider-Mans from different universes. And one of them was a powerless Spider-Man that was an actor in a TV show that was written by Stan Lee. And in the show, the main character, Spider-Man, within that, you know, the universe that the entire show had been set in, at the very end, visits that universe and actually goes swinging around with Stan Lee, who is voiced by Stan Lee, and they have a conversation about how Stan created him and how it's so crazy to actually see him in real life. And then that's it. And then Spider-Man heads out to go to other universes. And I think that's what's happening here. Like, it's like another, it's another universe that is creating this. And it's super similar to ours, in that you had these writers, but I think it's not technically ours. Like, I think you can maybe carve out like a sliver because of obviously like the Kevin thing, which is nice. Well, because
and it should be noted that it's actually Disney's headquarters. Like, that is where she's
right.
walking.
Yeah.
And that is the actual Marvel Studios thing, because we've seen other people go there. Like, that's the actual hallway.
And it was the actual receptionist that was working there at the time, apparently. So I got to look into this a little bit. I don't know how much you've read, but Jessica Gao did a brief interview that came out today after the finale dropped. And there were just a couple of things that I think are worth noting. One, again, this was filmed a while back, so I don't think that's the current receptionist there, but that is who was working there at the time. So they wanted to be, you know, really accurate still, except for Kevin. Two, one thing that I really loved is that this was apparently Kevin Feige's idea. And
really?
Yeah. So apparently this came about because Jessica kind of pitched the finale to him. And they had this conversation where he was like, you know, I don't know if you want it to go in that direction or if you just think it has to. And he said something to the effect of, I don't know why people always think that that's what a Marvel movie or show has to end like, because have any mandate. Like, that's not something that we require. And she was like, oh, wow. And that got them thinking about how they could really mess with that expectation, both from the creator's perspective and from the audience's perspective. And
wow. It's a Robbie Truth Bomb right there. Let's go.
Well, and I really love that because it makes so much sense. All of the conversations that she has in the writer's room, the conversations that she has with the Kevin robot, which, by the way, I hope people notice the little ball cap there affixed the top of the robot's head or ball cap looking apparatus.
Well, and I love that they gave him a name, like K-E-V-I-N actually stands right. for something.
Tony loves his acronyms. Yeah, I think it was excellent because I remember you and I talking last time you were in Austin. It was right around the Moon Knight finale, I think. And there was this tweet that was going around about how every Marvel thing ends the same. And you and I were saying that's not true, but kind of noting that that's a shtick, right?
Well, okay, but look, I need to say something here. I understand that it's a metaphor for all the things you're bringing up, right? Like, I get that they're doing commentary on major critiques sure. that people have.
Right.
And so, like, I'm not an idiot.
No.
I am an idiot, though, is, like, that's why I asked. Like, I don't understand if we're supposed to take anything literal from that, though.
Right. No, I...
That's why I brought up in the first place is my point. Like...
Right.
I just want
right.
people to know, I need some grace on this because this is so mind-blowing. My mind is still just in shambles.
Right. And the reason I'm approaching the commentary is one, because I thought about that article and wanted to hit it before I forgot. But two, because I think that is the headline there. And I think that's, in addressing your question, I think that's kind of the main answer from She-Hulk would be one thing Zeb actually told Candace and I at the convention is he said every time a Disney Plus show has come out, Marvel has said this is totally different. This is a totally new thing. We're totally kind of flipping the script. And he said they always say that, but this actually is that. And at the time, I was like, yeah, no, that makes sense because you and I have already talked about how different She-Hulk is in a lot of ways. But now Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they set out to do. I think they looked at this property as an opportunity to address some of these kind of complaints head on and show their savviness and show the perspective that they have as they're kind of moving forward. And for me, that was actually like a really encouraging, really confidence-inspiring move, because you and I, as high as we've been on She-Hulk, you know, over the course of the year have not been high on everything. And so I feel like before we dive more into the plot stuff, which I think we should in general after this, I think that that's important to note. I know you want it so badly.
No. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is going to be in three chunks kind of, because we're still just talking like high level here about this.
Right.
I want to go over some of the nitty gritty of the actual episode, but I see what you're saying. It's so encouraging as far as they are willing to do this stuff or willing to go this far.
Yeah. I mean, the conversation to me about like the thing that I loved so much, it felt like this is not, I'm not giving ourselves credit here at all. But one of the reasons why I loved it is it felt like they had like listened to our original rewatch episodes. In that, do you remember like when we used to talk about when we were ranking villains, you know, we would talk about how for so long Marvel had this problem of just having a villain that had the exact same powers as the hero.
Right.
And so I love the fact that they have that conversation at the table where she's like, that seems suspiciously like a super soldier serum. And they were like, no, it's a twist. Yeah. It's a villain with the powers of the hero. And she's like, isn't that how all of these always end? And it was just like, there were so many, like, I'm not going to go through every line like that, but that's like, it's not, I was trying to tell Candace, who watched this with me and also had a really good time watching it, it's not just meta. Like, we've been moving as a culture towards more meta stuff, towards more self-awareness, but this is like, this is beyond that. Like, this is like a deep dive in the weeds of like actual Twitter debates. Yeah, like, they are, like, this is beyond anything I've ever seen on that front, which is the only reason why I feel like I had to camp out here for a second, because it is like,
oh no,
a whole different animal.
We're not in a hurry, bro. This is going to take forever. We just got to get through this stuff. Like, okay, because like, even in the very intro thing, which in and of itself is goofy, that they're doing an homage to like those old 70s and 80s Incredible right. Hulk things, but like in that she's, you know, responds to haters, like Twitter haters, they say that right. in the actual montage. But
right.
But like, were you at all offended that it's like five levels deep, okay? Were you at all offended that Jen is even saying that is how they all end? Because you and I built this podcast trying to defend that is not how they always ended. Like, we had pushed back against that critique for 2 years now. So are you at all offended that they're even giving any credence to that perspective by next level deep making fun of that perspective?
The Marvel Cinematic Universe is known for its big spectacles and high stakes plot lines, but it's often said that Marvel movies all end the same way.
Wait, who's saying that?
Perhaps this is a result of following some unwritten rule that you have to throw a bunch of plot and flash and a whole blood thing that seems super suspiciously close to Super Soldier Serum at the audience in the climax. I propose we don't have to do that.
Huh.
It distracts from the story, which is that my life fell apart right when I was learning to be both Jen and She-Hulk. Those are my stakes, Kevin.
The KEVIN is processing this new data.
Yeah, no. I see what you're saying. Jen is not necessarily a reliable narrator in that context.
Mm.
Like, I don't think, you know, like, Jen's opinions aren't, I don't think, like, the opinions of Marvel Studios or, like, how we're supposed to feel about that stuff. Like, I think we get that all the way back to, like the conversation Jen has with Bruce about Cap's virginity, where it's, like, she's focusing in on certain things and right. brings her own personality to bear.
And to answer my own question, I also want to add that I think that's why they make it so over the top. Like the writers being like, no, this is how it always goes. And then the fact that Kevin is a literal machine. Like think about the commentary.
Right.
Like we talked about the Marvel machine and that she actually gets back there. By the way, I thought it might actually be Kevin when she got there. I was like, oh, he's going to make his first appearance. But then like, I think by them making it a robot who makes these for peak, whatever, entertainment, whatever he says, I think by them going so far over the top, they're basically saying, like, don't be offended by what Jen is saying because we don't even think it's true. This is ridiculous.
Right. No, and that's, yes, and that's why I loved it because it is, I think, like, I'm going to see if I can articulate this correctly.
It's so complicated.
Here's why I think it gets me so excited. It reminds me of a lot of the energy that we had when we started this podcast and a lot of our aim when we started it, which was to show a lot of people that didn't really understand what there was to love about the MCU, what we loved about it. And the thing that I loved so much about that is how many people we were able to bring into the fold. Even just people, you know, friends of ours that had kind of missed the bus, maybe seen like three or four movies along the way. And especially because of the pandemic, got a chance to rewatch. But a lot of the passion there from our perspective was like, no, like this is, it's not,
it's this different.
It's different. You shouldn't lump this in with Aquaman. No offense to Aquaman. Like you shouldn't lump this in with
Batman to Aquaman for sure. Offense to Batman versus Superman, no doubt.
It's a different thing. And just kind of set aside your preconceived notions and start on this journey. And I'm not saying that it's gonna be the equivalent of watching like a Paul Thomas Anderson film, but I think that it's going to be a really enjoyable, really rewarding thing. And what I love about this episode is it's reminding people that Marvel is still different from that stuff. It's different from Star Wars. It's different from DC. It's different from Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings or any of the other content. And I'm not saying it's different in that it's necessarily better, but I'm saying there is an understanding by Marvel of the conversations that are being had and in such a way where they can poke fun at it and say, like, look, we know this is what you think this is. And in addressing that, we are showing you how much it's not that.
Oh, see, I think Marvel Studios, the core team, are so many light years ahead of those other properties because of this awareness and because of their willingness to push the creative boundaries. And it's not just for money. Like, they're going to make their money because of it. Like, even She-Hulk, right, is not the biggest driver of television right now. It's not. But they're willing to do something creatively different just because they want to and because Kevin cares. That's the difference. It will never be replicated by anybody until somebody has the level of care, thoughtfulness, and creativity that Kevin has.
Yeah.
And the whole team, to be honest. Victoria and...
And Brad, of course.
Right, Brad, yeah. But that's where I think you're so correct and where they are genius is that... I'll say this, Robbie. Like, there have been a lot of people in my circle who have been hesitant to jump on the She-Hulk train. And I think that if the finale had continued like it was, right, where there's a huge fight at Emile's farm, I think I would have been like, it's a fun show. But I'm not, like, forcing people. Like, I'm not going to, like, at a restaurant defend it, right? I'm sitting there with someone, and they're like, oh, it looks kind of dumb. I'm not going to see it. Like, I had friends literally say that. I think now, because of this finale, I would probably say that. I'd be like, dude, go watch it, actually. Go watch the whole thing. You'll love it. And I think that's where they're genius.
Yeah.
Is by being this different now, I have chills right now. It's now must watch.
Yeah. Yes.
And am I crazy?
No. I mean, and that, man, that's the thing. And that goes back to what we've always talked about. These moments where, you know, like we talk about the superhero fatigue. And I have people, again, that text me all the time to let me know that they're experiencing superhero fatigue as though I need to, like, treat that ailment or something. But, like, that's not a new conversation. People think it is, but that conversation has been going on since, like, the first Avengers movie came out.
And it's not Marvel Studios' fault, so stop saying that.
And in every step of the way, there are ways that Marvel has kind of reinvented themselves and shown how they can reinvent the genre as a whole. I think Guardians was, well, Iron Man was the first big example of that. And then Guardians, I think, was the second. And I think that this is so much in that vein where, like, as bold as those both were at the time, and now they've both kind of become templates, you know, in and of themselves for other properties, this is doing that. And I promise you, we're going to see something from Sony within a couple of years or something from DC.
Yes, that's what I was going
to
say too.
That tries to have the same kind of approach. Yep. And it's not going to work this well.
Oh my gosh, I forgot to say that in my last rant. That was my other point, which is that everybody else feels so reactive. And Marvel has always been so proactive, where it's like Marvel sets the new bar. They try something different. They're willing to do WandaVision. They're willing to do She-Hulk before anyone else is doing it. The other properties are causing the superhero fatigue. By the way, I also think that people get quote unquote superhero fatigue from just other properties with enhanced people as well. Like
Right. If
Star Wars is mishandled, people lump that into superhero fatigue. If
That's
even,
a good
I think
point.
Like Game of Thrones is mishandled, it can be lumped into the same kind of genre. And I don't think
which
that's
it fair. Hasn't been yet, but.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. But you know what I mean? I think it bleeds over into any like kind of good versus evil where somebody's like a special individual type property.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Star Wars for so long, like during the new trilogy, which there was parts that I really enjoyed and I'm a Star Wars fan, there were so many things where they were so going to play it safe. And when they did do something bold and it caused a stir, they were so reactive in that last movie of like, well, you know, last time we tried this, it pissed some people off. So kind of back to like the safe hits, you know? And it's like,
They're
always so concerned that if they do something really, really bold, like how about a show it's not about Darth Vader anymore, for example.
Right.
If you do something like that, it's going to really throw people off. So let's just give them Darth Vader because that's what people want.
Right. Well,
I know it's a Star Wars tangent, but people do this all the time. DC like sees how Marvel does it and then goes,
Right. Oh,
we need to create a joined universe. That's what we need to do. And so like a few years after Marvel started doing it, they tried to get on board.
Right.
And Sony is doing the same thing. They're missing key ingredients, though, that they think they can just replicate. And one of those key ingredients is that Marvel is never waiting for someone else to do it. They're the one trying it first.
Right.
And then everyone else is like watching and going like, is that going to work? Oh, it does. Let's try it.
it sounds sappy, but what I was telling you earlier, I mean, as of now, and you know, we can, I guess, reassess like 20 years from now, because that's kind of how long it would take. But as of now, there is nothing else that has ever existed in the film and TV context like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, period.
Just like nothing had ever really existed when they started joining up superheroes for the Avengers.
Right. Yeah, like now that seems so doable, right? Because we've now had characters join across properties and we've had that on TV, you know, even the Defenders several years after that. Like there have been even within Marvel times where they've replicated their own template. And I'm not saying that's not true. We've talked about that on the rewatch. But yeah, they are like there is nothing else. It's not just the connectivity. It's the way it's done. It's the pacing. It's the fact that they've gone across different mediums and different genres. And the fact that we now, you know, a large portion of the population, we're all following this one ongoing story that started in 2008. And it is still the same narrative. It like reminds me of when we had Douglas Wolk on the podcast to talk about the Marvel Comics narrative that's been going since the 60s. It's the same thing now, and it's starting to get really impressive. And while people talk about like the building fatigue, I'm more impressed by the lack of that in some ways. And that's why I think this gets me so amped, is because it's like it's the best parts of what I loved about Ms. Marvel, you know, like reinventing so much of that stuff. And what I loved about parts of Moon Knight doing that. And this is just a whole different level of showing like, yeah, like stick around for this ride. This is this unique experiment still. It's not like that. Maybe that's the takeaway for me in terms of the kind of genre meta conversation here before we get into more specifics, is like this shows me, and I hope shows other people, that Marvel is not just the vanilla corporate content machine. And I think that's why the conversation with the Kevin Robot was so funny and so effective. Marvel is still an experimental creative enterprise the same way that they were when they were officing above a car dealership in the early 2000s. And they were betting the farm on this Iron Man movie that didn't even have a real script. You know, it's like, it's still got the same DNA. It's still got the same creatives that you shouted out. And that's what gets me so excited for the future, for the next few years, and to kind of continue bringing people into this world and to this conversation.
Oh, I love it so much. I love it. I love you. I love what you just said. I love that it brought joy to my heart right now. What a trip this has already been. This is going to be a double ad break show, y'all. Double ad break. We're going to take a quick break, and then let's get to the specifics of the actual She-Hulk episode 9, which we haven't even really talked about yet. So we'll be right back. All right, so Robbie, just a few things that I wanted to point out, and this is maybe all the different ways that the episode itself, and I can't even keep up with these, right? But the episode itself is aware of itself
right,
and how meta this was. I loved her parents being there for her when everything was going to crap, and mm-hmm. I love the meta commentary of how her parents aren't the things that she later complains the daddy issues about, you
right.
know?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Her parents
wow.
are
yeah.
there for. So, like, that's another way it's subverting the typical critique, right?
Mm-hmm. Same daddy, same issues.
Her, exactly. Same daddy, same issues. Two daddies, two separate issues.
Are we done here?
Oh, would not mind seeing Daredevil again. A woman has needs.
Historically, we've been light in that department.
Oh, while I've got you here.
Oh, wait, you are sitting?
What's with all the daddy issues? We got Tony Stark, daddy issues.
Jen.
Thor, daddy issues. Loki, same daddy, same issues.
Oh, boy.
Star-Lord, two daddies, two issues.
Jen, please stop.
Oh, and when are we getting the X-Men?
I cannot tell you that.
Okay, back to She-Hulk. I do have some thoughts about the direction of season two.
You will not be able to access the KEVIN again.
What?
That error on our platform has been fixed.
That's it? We're done?
That's it? You obliterated the thrilling ending Kevin formulated.
Well, yeah, that's what Hulks do. We smash things. Bruce smashes buildings, I smash fourth walls and bad endings. And sometimes Matt Murdock.
Okay, now get back to the show. See you on the big screen.
Really?
No.
Oh, whatever.
Dude,
Kevin.
There were so many references. It's hard to even keep track of.
Also,
the whole thing was
Tatiana's delivery of all of those in this, just across the whole series, but in this episode, chef's kiss.
I laughed at this part in particular.
Why does there even need to be a She-Hulk? It's not like there's a He-Hulk.
And Lady Thor?
Guys, she just sucks, okay? And I'm not just saying that because she's a female. I would have the exact same criticisms if she was a man. Yeah.
And obviously, that was just one of like 20 jokes about an all-male get-together where you had to call them females.
Which I just made that joke to a lawyer friend of mine when Kiss and I were in New York. We were catching up with friends, and I was talking about how it's such a specific thing where certain like lawyers always use the word female in a way that feels like every time just like strangely out of place to me. And I was trying to explain to Candace what I meant by that. And then they had that conversation in the episode today. And I was like, man, this show is reading my mind.
How about this clip about the CGI commentary?
But you must first transform back to Jennifer.
Why?
You are very expensive.
Oh, sure.
But wait until the camera is off you. The visual effects team has moved on to another project.
Okay.
There, do it now.
Yes, I love that. I love that so much.
How funny is it that they actually in the show say, hey, don't turn into She-Hulk because it's too expensive for us.
But you know what's interesting is I noticed then once she goes back in, they show the transformation. Did you catch that?
Well, and then when she's exiting, they purposely don't. You know, when she's like,
right, right.
So what's the best way for me to get out here? And it just cuts to broad daylight and they're already just in a different place. But yeah, I actually weirdly thought before this, the CGI was maybe a little bit off. And then they got to that whole conversation and I was like, oh my gosh, like maybe they legitimately ran out of budget. Because right. I know there was actually some reshoots on this part. So again, just aware of like, hey, we ran out of money on the CGI. How are we going to handle that? Well, let's just talk about it in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've never seen that. That's so yeah. weird.
Yeah. Incredible.
Dude, I there's actually too many for me to just go over right now. There were so many references and so many meta commentary things. How about the wink to the X-Men?
Yes. Yeah. And which I believe, you know, sound the alert is the first time the word X-Men has ever been used in a Marvel Studios production. You know, again, True. We can. She was out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I guess, but it was a Marvel Studios project, and we heard X-Men.
Okay, did you take that offhanded comment from Kevin about how we'll find out about Bruce in the next film as a confirmation that Bruce is going to get a film? And then, especially with him having a son now, which you talked about.
Which,
crazy.
I know.
So man. That is coming now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some kind of formal announcement in the weeks that follow. But that's a whole thing that we'll have to talk about in more of a kind of Hulk-focused prediction episode. Because really, I mean, he was only in like a minute of this entire episode. So I don't want to devote too much time here to that. But yeah, I mean, like we talked early on and I was like, again, you know, I will admit this. I've done this before. I was like, yeah, I don't know. Surely they're not going to do the Hulk's kid thing. And I think you thought the same. And I will say afterwards, some folks on Slack kind of took me to task for that. And were like, why would you have a problem with that? I will say now, I'm still not sold. That's the one part of this I'm not quite sure on. I'm not against it. But I'm withholding judgment, but it's not something that was a pump up. It wasn't a letdown for me at all. It didn't take me out.
Right.
It didn't upset
me. But it wasn't
me.
Like a reveal that you were like, let's go.
Right. Yeah. It was not a pump. I think it was probably a pump up moment for some folks. And for me, it could still be depending on how things progress. Candace actually just made a great point, which is it's something I think we brought up maybe on a prior episode. But yeah, especially after Love and Thunder with Thor moving into that role, it feels a little bit potentially redundant to have Hulk, who I think is a character that has become associated with Thor in a lot of ways, inhabit the same role. And, you know, I could see how they react to that really differently. And maybe the fact that they are in similar spots could actually further their friendship and relationship in interesting ways. And so I'm in no way dismissing it or flat out against it, but I do want to say that that's something that I'm still a little uneasy about.
Sure. Me too. Then Daredevil showed up again. He came back, and so there'll be people online that are all mad about it for sure, living life and happy. Uh-huh. And seems to be a good dude. Everyone's probably mad about it.
Man, okay. Did you see that interview from Charlie Cox that was going around this past week?
I did. Yep, I did.
We should talk. You, I've been talking too much. You should tell folks about that may not have seen it, because I really, really loved that little clip.
Yeah. For people that didn't see it, it's just what we've talked about on this podcast. It's Charlie Cox referencing that he had some time to go back through the Daredevil comics and realizing that there are more sides to him than just the brooding side. And he talked about how, obviously, with She-Hulk being a comedy, he had to kind of fit into the tone of that show. It doesn't mean that Daredevil's always going to have that tone.
Right.
But for this show, he wanted to fit in well. And to which I say, perfect. It's perfect. I don't know why everyone has it set that Matt Murdock can't be happy. Like, can we never see Matt Murdock smile at a family dinner? I guess not to some people. But to me.
By the way, dinner table scene. I guess lunch, but.
And people forget that Matthew smiled some in the original show, too.
Yeah.
And the lack of smiling got a little draining at times. Yeah, it's like, okay, come on.
Well, and one, and because again, in the comics, even when, even in some of the darker comics, Matt's still supposed to be a charming guy. And at some point, you know, if you're only ever brooding, that's not a super charming person. And so I loved that. And, you know, we've talked about that, but I also love the comment he made about how any human being, no matter how much they've gone through, has different sides to them. And that's like, that is another thing I think Marvel has tried to capture. And I'm not saying it's always been perfect because, you know, even in the comics, you have different people writing the characters. And sometimes that can result in really great, like really, really natural and rewarding character progressions. Like, for instance, Thor and Ragnarok. But it can also turn into things that maybe feel jarring. But either way, I think that's really important because, yeah, even if we do think that that's the definitive side of Matt or Daredevil, that doesn't mean it's his only side. You know, like we have that side of Tony where he gets really intense and RDJ can do that perfect kind of like watery-eyed focus, like tension. But at the same time, like Tony has a lot of moments where he's not that. And so it's like, I think the same, like Charlie had this great line. Charlie says, you know, human beings have multiple aspects of their personality. And Matt Murdock is a human being that should also have that. And so he noted that, yeah, like this was kind of just a fun thing for him to see how Matt is in that context. And that that doesn't have to change at all the way that they would approach Born Again. But I like the way that it could inform that personally.
All right, again, I've only seen it once, so forgive me. I know there's millions of things we're missing. One specific question. We get to the part of the finale where Todd turns into another Hulk. The serum actually works, and she's like, there's no way this is going to work, right? And then Abomination comes in as a speaker, Bruce, Titania, etc. But what are we left to believe actually practically happened there in a few instances? Like, I know that they're going to reverse it and say, like, Bruce didn't ever show up.
Uh-huh.
Todd never turned into a Hulk, right? So that never happened. But was Abomination speaking to Intelligentsia knowing they were a pro-male group? But I just didn't understand, like, when that scene first started happening before I knew it was going to happen, I was thinking, oh, gosh, Emil's actually bad after all this.
Right.
He's the one, like, spurring this on. But then it was more of, like, a empower yourself type speech, and I didn't know if, like, oh, wait, are we actually meant to believe that he didn't do anything inappropriate? It's just that he thought he was being hired for a speaking gig?
Yes. So my read on that in terms of what actually happened – is that, yes, the Intelligentsia, they were meeting at the lodge. Abomination thought, or, you know, Blonsky, however you want to look at it, thought that he was just doing his normal thing of just doing sort of like vaguely inspiring talks and his haikus and all that. And I think that they show that by the things that he says. Like, he never addresses the underlying ideology of the Intelligentsia. He says, you know, I've been told that you're a lot of, you know, you're people that are unhappy with your station life and want to pull yourself up. And so it's like, I think we're supposed to think he's kind of been duped by Todd, or at least is just lacks enough awareness to. Okay.
But
to
he was any, just getting in trouble.
Right.
Because for, he turned into Abomination.
Now, I do think that there's that moment where, you know, Jen asks for an apology and he says, you know, I'm sorry it made you feel that way. And she says, is there any real apology in there? So I do think
that's for lying to her.
Right. Right. But I mean, yeah. So I think that there is a level of, okay, well, like, I don't think Blonsky has this. He's actually evil in the background. But I do think that undermines a little bit of him as just the kind of benevolent, like, you know, only, and, you know, again, the credit scene there. But before I get, because we'll talk about the credit scene at the end, I do want to answer that because I've been thinking about it. I think what happened, for people that just want to know the straight plot of this and how it fits into the overall narrative we've been talking about, is everything leading up to the moment that she gets pulled out or you know, goes to talk to the folks at Marvel happened, except what she specifically explicitly changes with Kevin or K-E-V-I-N. And what I mean by that is I think everything else, like the meeting, all of that takes place. The difference is Bruce never shows up. Todd never turns into a Hulk. And it's all in daylight. And I think those are the differences. Now, I think those could have implications for other things that change further back. Like, I think you could argue, well, that means then that they weren't actually able to synthesize the serum in a way that could turn someone into a Hulk. Or maybe it did. We'll probably find out more about that when we see the leader, if there does wind up being a connection there down the road. But I think for immediate purposes, that's the only difference. So I think everything leading up to that still happened. And I think everything we saw after was the result of the stuff that we had seen leading up to it. It just feels jarring, which I think is intentional because now it's in daylight. So it's like, I think that they were trying to show that this is a new branch, but they also made a point to show exactly what was being changed, which I think is really important because I think if not, it would be impossible to actually make sense of the actual story.
Besides that, my notes just say, what the heck is happening? And I laughed out loud at multiple points, some of which I played in these clips already.
Okay, so yeah, just lastly, so we don't miss anything, do you want to do kind of a brief character by character, where does this leave folks? You know, because we have been talking about what exactly the story is, and I want to make sure that I have this straight. I think our listeners might appreciate that as well.
Let's do it.
Okay, so starting with Jen, we talked about this at the very top. I think that she is now living with her parents and unemployed, right? But in a relationship with Matthew, potentially.
Correct. Although we didn't get any definitive answer on her employment. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that because she solved that, she could have a job elsewhere.
I think that's fair.
Although I think the ending scene was meant to depict that she can be happy without She-Hulk, without her job, without all these things, you know,
right.
She still can embrace it.
Yeah.
So maybe she doesn't, I guess.
We got the Fast and Furious family meal ending there. And we all know that
which is funny. It was funny.
That. Yeah. Oh,
Charlie
for sure.
Did great. Oh, let me even say this. Like, not only was Charlie acting it well, but there's good chemistry between Jen and Matthew.
Yeah.
And Matthew, I just love how he handled the family awkwardness. It was pretty fun.
Yeah. No.
Why don't you check on the burgers?
Yeah. Yeah. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. I feel like this show, like, you know, however many minutes we've gotten to Matt Murdock, I think has just done wonders to me, deepening the character and showing, like, we talked about this, Kyle, at our Friends from Work Plus review of the second chunk of season two, because there are all these scenes between Matt and Elektra when he's younger that are kind of supposed to be this version of Matt. And we talked about how it wasn't a Charlie Cox issue, but it was just like the chemistry wasn't great and the writing was a little off and it just wasn't like, I came away being like, he's just kind of a weirdo more than being like, oh, wow, yeah, like Matt's like, he's a real player. And I like that here, it's not that he's a player and that he's like a sleazy guy, but it's like you see the charisma and I like that.
Absolutely. So that's kind of where that leaves Matthew, by the way, in turn, is that he clearly is not dating Karen in any way. And he's able and willing to travel to LA for certain things, but that he's not staying. He's going back to Hell's Kitchen. He still has his stuff there. So that's where we leave him. I just thought it was interesting. They actually make a point of him saying that.
For sure. Yeah. And I like that they also don't definitively say how much money he does or doesn't make. You know, like that there's a joke going back and forth because talking about the, you know, one for them, one for us thing. I'm not saying that is some sort of like dangling thread, but I do think it's something that it caught my ear because, like I've said before in the comics, Matt is is often not like a struggling pro bono lawyer. Like he is sort of like at certain points, almost a high society, like rich, really successful lawyer. And I think people in the Netflix fandom would probably not like to see that happen. And so Marvel may not touch that. But I think that they've kind of left the door open by him saying like, yes, I'm still doing the stuff that I believe in that is the basis of Nelson and Murdoch, but I've also got these other really high paying clients that I use to kind of keep, to allow us to take these other cases. So I'm curious to see like how that factors in to the version of Daredevil that we get in Born Again.
And then we leave Nikki and Pug still employed by GLKNH, correct?
Yeah. Oh man. Great Pug episode, by the way.
Great Pug episode. He was funny. He was funny when Nikki's telling him what to say. Pretty good.
And that makes me mad.
No, say it like in a mad way. And I'm pissed off. Yeah, dude, you're right.
I love to. And he's like,
nepotism, man.
And he's like, I can't go in there with just one earbud, and that's so weird. She's like, no, you're not going to be the only one, I promise you. It's like a bro, like Bluetooth headset thing. Well, we kind of already talked about Hulk and Scar, you know, briefly. I think that does show, I mean, he has for sure been on Sakaar. He has a kid. I do like that, at least in the Slack, the current headcanon for why his son's haircut is so atrocious is because the Stan Lee barber is still the one giving the haircuts.
Yeah, it's a good call. Good call.
I like that. If that wasn't intentional, I'm just going to pretend it was. I'm glad we're doing this because one thing I meant to mention earlier that I think is interesting on a couple levels is the Kevin bot makes that comment about, no, we have to have Hulk come in here because that's how we introduce the, and she says, no, wait for the movie. But then we still do get that introduction, just in a different way. So I thought it was interesting that Jen doesn't like fully win out, and like she doesn't get rid of all of the elements that the Kevin bot wanted in the story. Some of them just get remixed. I liked it because, and I mean that as another compliment to this episode, because it got me thinking, oh yeah, we're not going to get any follow-up on that now, which is like kind of a bummer, but like I sort of respect it. And then they subverted that again. Like I think this show multiple times an episode has found ways to, like for instance, The Lodge, I didn't like until like seconds before the actual reveal happened, the same thing with like Matt showing up in episode 8, as obvious as it seems in retrospect, I hadn't put it together yet. And then right as I put it together, they're walking into the lodge and you realize that they're all at the same place. Like it's done that in multiple ways, some meta and some not. And so this was an example of that. But yeah, I think.
Well, and then the post-credit scene.
Yes,
you leave
that was
Emile
the last one.
Back in jail and Wong still stealing him out to do things. And by the way, one of the best meta lines they've ever had was the very final post-credit scene line where Emile's like, you were in another TV show, weren't you? That's why you were late. And he goes, this really is the era of peak television, isn't it? Which, I mean, we literally were talking about that.
Right.
Is this prestige television?
Right.
You know, so many times.
Yeah,
so
no,
funny.
Incredible. And from a story perspective, means that, I mean, because he's talking about going to live at Kamertage. So I don't think he's just going out to go do another fight. Like, I think that is supposed to tell us that Abomination is now out in the world and a fugitive, which I think could be interesting as we're looking towards the Thunderbolts film.
I was waiting for him to give him the actual Wi-Fi password from Doctor Strange because Emile asks, you know, is there a Wi-Fi password? I thought that'd been a fun Easter egg.
Oh,
if
yeah.
He had said the same one from Doctor Strange.
Right. Yeah, I think that about covers it. The Hulk stuff, like I said, if you're curious, I think in our second episode, we got into a lot of the World War Hulk, Planet Hulk stuff that we were thinking this might draw from. And I think all of that is pretty relevant. So go back and listen to that. And we'll probably have a separate Hulk prediction implication episode eventually. But I think that for now, based on what we have to go off, I think that about covers it.
There's still so much to get into that I'm sure we are missing. We'd love to hear from you guys. I'm also thinking about how now She-Hulk is done. We're going to do a reflections episode on She-Hulk and grade the whole show and rank it. We also will have some time for some fun bonus episodes, Rob, like some of the stuff you were talking about. Like,
yeah,
there's some fun discussions, some power rankings things, some prediction things, some Saga So Far things. So we're going to be in a little bit of a different phase here for a little bit, Rob. Anyways, we'll talk about that later. I'm going to do something I've never done before.
Ooh.
I'm not grading this. I can't. I can't grade this episode.
Wow.
I'm sorry. You're on your own. I refuse to grade it. I have no idea what to think. I just need more time to sit with my feelings on all of it. I loved it, I think. I read one comment from somebody, which I shouldn't have read, where I think it was someone from the direct that didn't love it because it felt like it abandoned plots that they were setting up. But that was literally the entire point, on the other hand, that they were trying to abandon it to prove that like it doesn't have to be one culmination of plots, which is crazy. So I'm thinking like I need some time to think about like, do I like that it didn't?
Like Titania is actually, speaking of people we didn't check in with there.
Right. Like we don't know, was she hired?
Yeah. Why was she not?
Like,
yeah. Why? What? Yeah. So, but you know, one thing that I do that I did think was at least implicitly answered maybe is if the intelligentsia people had been in contact with Emil, and again, I don't think that that is supposed to show that Emil was in on it, but if there was some connection, if they had met there before, that could be how the Wrecking Crew guy wound up there, which at least kind of makes sense of that question that we had had, though I know that's not been like a burning question for people. So there were still some things that I gleaned.
For sure. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I just need more time. I need another watch.
Because even
Titania, right? Like Titania, does she get removed from the story when Jen visits Kevin? Or did she show up pre getting removed from the finale, if that makes sense? And so, are we led to believe that she still was tied with Hulk King in some way because she showed up? Did I miss that? That's what I'm saying. I just need more time. I think I love it. I think it's genius. I'm not sure if I'll find some things that I'm like, oh man, they maybe sacrificed a few plots for the greater good of the creativity and the wildness of it. But I think I like that. So again, I think it's a good grade. I'm not doing it today. Give me some time. I'll come back.
Okay, I'm going to say this, and I'm preparing you, like, I'm going to prepare you in the same way that I try to prepare Samwise whenever we have, like, I see the mailman walking up to the door, and I try to, like, I try to focus his attention on me and let him know that it's going to be okay.
I don't like this analogy.
and if something's going to happen, but he doesn't have to worry because it's fine. That's what I'm telling you now. I feel like, though, there were elements of this that were directly responsive to the complaints about the WandaVision finale in particular. That is not me like giving credence to those complaints. And I don't think it's the show giving credence to those either. But I kept thinking about that. One, it's the only other 9-episode series that it's the other 9-episode series that's live action and has this kind of format that we've gotten. But also, it feels like what they were doing was a bit of a parody on that, in that you had all these little threads that in the WandaVision context, we were like, okay, well, how do all these connect, and Hayward and Skrulls, and is there like a Fantastic Four thing? And then all of this stuff. And some people thought it was all like thrown at the wall in the last bit, and that while the really emotional WandaVision moments worked really, really well, that stuff didn't. You and I are not really in that camp. But I thought that this was really interesting because right at the moment when it's like, okay, here are all the characters and they're all coming together and we're going to try to address it all, is when we then kind of have it all pulled back and totally changed. And I bring that up because I think that, yeah, in that kind of context, I do think they would have at least tried to give some like lip service to the Titania role in it all. And this feels like not a dropped ball. Like you said, it feels like an intentional move to not do that, to say like, we're not even going to try. Like, rather than do it in a way that people will think is unsatisfactory, we're just going to not even hint at it, because guess what? Like, we have more projects and we'll probably see Titania again and we'll explain it then. And I could see people loving or hating that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I receive all that and I think I love it. I'm in the love it camp, but I just got to process it, because that felt very similar to the Moon Knight episode 4 ending. That's where my mind is at right now. Same thing there.
Yeah, I thought about that too. Man. Okay, well, if you're not grading, then...
You have to still.
I mean...
Do it.
I'm torn because...
You were prepared to do it.
I was prepared, but now I'm torn because part of me is like, do we just wait for the Reflections episode? Because I feel like if we drop our grades here, if you don't, but if I do, you know, I don't want to give... I kind of want to hold out and just... I'll grade this, I think, at the same time that we rank the series as a whole. And I think I like that plan. And that'll give me time to think on it as well.
So all I can say at this exact moment is stay in touch with us everywhere else, because you and I don't fully know our schedule yet for the rest of the year. For Friends from Work, I know we're going to get a Wakanda Forever screener sometime soon. I know we have that Guardian special again. But we want to have some other fun discussions. We want to introduce some new elements. We'll probably have some time off around holidays, etc. And so the only thing I can say is, if you want to stay in touch with Friends from Work, please subscribe to this podcast, first of all. Second of all, just stay in touch on all of our outlets, like social media, via a review. Send us a message on our website, theffwpodcast.com, because there's still a lot going on. Like, if you want to be a part of the Epic Hero Shop, Epic Heroween giveaway, follow us on social media. If you want to know what kind of episodes are coming up, stay in touch. Check out Friends from Work Plus. And then, like I said, for example, we're talking to Matthew Berry next week. So if you're curious about his experience on Endgame, or if you're curious about fantasy football, there's that. Just a whole lot still coming out, Robbie. But as I'm wrapping this up, I'm realizing we really need to stay in touch with people.
Yeah.
We're not going anywhere. I just don't know if there'll be an episode next week yet or whatever. We're still figuring a lot of things out.
Yeah. We keep saying this, and you know, in light of the Epic Hero Shop contest, this is especially relevant. But we've had a lot of fun using Twitter to kind of keep folks up to date. We did some Comic-Con updates there like we promised, and it's also just been a fun way to kind of touch base with creators that we've interviewed and kind of repost interesting things. So if you do listen to this podcast and you have a Twitter presence in kind of off times like this, I think that is the best way to stay in touch with us and to kind of keep a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the MCU.
Whenever we get to the end of these eras, like now we're done with She-Hulk, Robbie, crazy. I always get emotionally drained from being 100 minutes into this. I get tired physically from talking for 100 minutes, but then I'm always grateful. Like, it's easy to reflect on the content we had, the community we have, my relationship with you. It's just always wild. I get to these weird moments at the end, but I'm so thankful for you. I'm thankful for the show. I'm thankful for everyone listening. And as Dr. Disrespect says, we're all the way at the top, but we're only halfway there. So we're just getting started.
Oh, I love that. I love all that. This is how it should feel.
We love you guys. We'll be in touch. Hope you enjoyed it like we did. We'll talk to you soon here on Friends from Work.
The cat sat on the mat.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.